Several months have passed away, and we're in the throne room of the palace. It is night, and Captain Fitzbattleaxe is singing to Princess Zara.
Doesn't admit of a question, should keep himself quiet, attend to his diet, and carefully nurse his digestion. But when he's madly in love, it's certain to tell on his singing. You can't do chromatics with proper emphatics when anguish your bosom is ringing. When distracted with worries in plenty, and his pulse is 120, and his fluttering bosom the slave of mistrust is, a tenor can't do himself justice. Now observe. Oh, you see, I can't do myself justice. I could sing if my fervor were mock. It's easy enough if you're acting. But when one's emotion is born of devotion, you mustn't be over-exacting. One ought to be firm as a rock, to venture a shake in vibrato. When fervor's expected, keep cool and collected, or never attempt agitato. But of course, when his tongue is of leather, and his lips appear pasted together, and his sensitive palate as dry as a crust is, a tenor can't do himself justice. Now observe. It's no use, I can't do myself justice.
Why, Arthur, what does it matter? When the higher qualities of the heart are all that can be desired, the higher notes of the voice are matters of comparative insignificance. Who thinks slightingly of the coconut because it is husky? Besides, you are not singing for an engagement. You have that already.
How good and wise you are. How unerringly your practiced brain winnows the wheat from the chaff, the material from the merely incidental.
My Girton training, Arthur. At Girton all is wheat, and idle chaff is never heard within its walls. But tell me, is not all working marvellously well? Have not our flowers of progress more than justified their name?
We have indeed done our best. Captain Corcoran and I have in concert thoroughly remodeled the sister services, and upon so sound a basis that the South Pacific trembles at the name of Utopia.
How clever of you.
Clever? Not a bit. It's as easy as possible when the Admiralty and Horse Guards are not there to interfere, and so with the others. freed from the trammels imposed upon them by idle acts of Parliament, all have given their natural talents full play and introduced reforms which even in England were never dreamt of.
But perhaps the most beneficent change of all has been effected by Mr. Goldberry, who, discarding the exploded theory that some strange magic lies hidden in the number 7, has applied the limited liability principle to individuals. And every man, woman, and child is now a company limited, with liability restricted to the amount of his declared capital. There's not a christened baby in Utopia who has not already issued his little prospectus.
Marvelous is the power of a civilization which can transmute by a word a limited income into an income limited.
Reform has not stopped here. It has been applied even to the costume of our people. Discarding their own barbaric dress, the natives of our land have unanimously adopted the tasteful fashions of England in all their rich entirety. Scafio and Fantas have undertaken a contract to supply the whole of Utopia with clothing designed upon the most approved English models. And the first drawing room, under the new state of things, is to be held here this evening.
But drawing rooms are always held in the afternoon.
Ah, we've improved upon that. We all look so much better by candlelight. And when I tell you, dearest, that my court train has just arrived, you will understand that I am longing to go and try it on.
Then we must part.
Necessarily for a time.
Just as I wanted to tell you, with all the passionate enthusiasm of my nature, how deeply, how devotedly I love you.
Hush! Are these the accents of a heart that really feels? True love does not indulge in declamation. Its voice is sweet and soft and low. The west wind whispers when he woos the poplars.
Oh, To a monarch who has been accustomed to the uncontrolled use of his limbs, the costume of a British field marshal is perhaps at first a little cramping. Fitzmetallax, are you sure that this is all right? It's not a practical joke, is it? No one has a keener sense of humor than I have, but the first statutory cabinet council of Utopia Limited must be conducted with dignity and impressiveness. Now, where are the other five who signed the Articles of Association?
Sir, they are here.
Who? Gentlemen, our daughter holds her first drawing room in half an hour, and we shall have time to make our half-yearly report in the interval. I am necessarily unfamiliar with the forms of an English cabinet council. Perhaps the Lord Chamberlain will kindly put us in the way of doing the thing properly and with due regard to the solemnity of the occasion.
Certainly. Nothing simpler. Kindly bring your chairs forward. Captain Corcoran, you sit here, and the army there, and the law, Sir Bailey, and, Mr. Blushington. His Majesty will, of course, preside.
Like this?
Like this.
We take your word for it that this is all right. You are not making fun of us. This is in accordance with the practice of the Court of St. James's.
Well, it is in accordance with the practice of the Court of St. James's Hall.
Oh, it seems odd, but never mind.
Society has quite forsaken all our wicked causes, which ends our police courts and abolishes divorces.
Divorces nearly obsolete in England.
No tolerance we show to undeserving rank and splendor, for the higher his position is, the greater the offender.
That's a maxim that is prevalent in England.
No peerist at our drawing room before the presence passes who wouldn't be accepted by the lower middle classes. Each shady dame, whatever be her rank, is bowed out neatly.
In short, this happy country has been anglicized completely. It really is surprising what a thorough anglicizing we have brought about to turn despite another land. In an enterprising moment, she is England with improvements which she dutifully offered to our motherland.
We have beautified, we've done it willy-nilly, and all that isn't Belgrave Square is spared and Piccadilly.
We have the finest summeries in England.
We've solved the labour question with discrimination polished, so poverty is obsolete and hunger is abolished.
We are going to abolish it in England.
The Chamberlain, our native stage, has purged beyond the question of risky situation and indelicate suggestion. No peace is tolerated if it's costumed indiscreetly.
In short, this happy country has been anglicized completely. It really is surprising what a thorough anglicizing we have brought about to Toby's friend in our motherland. In a enterprising moment, she is England with the privilege of dutifully offered to our motherland.
Our peerage we remodeled on an intellectual basis, which certainly is rough on our hereditary races.
We are going to remodel it in England.
The brewers and the cotton lords no longer seek admission, and literary merit meet with proper recognition.
As literary merit does in England.
Who knows but we may count among our intellectual chickens, like you and Earl of Thackeray, and perhaps the Duke of Dickens. Lord Fildes and Viscount Millay, when they come, we'll welcome sweetly.
In short, this happy country has been anglicized completely. It really is surprising what a thorough anglicizing we have brought about to Tokyo's quite another land. In her enterprising movement, she is England with improvements which she dutifully offered to our motherland. It really is surprising what a thorough anglicizing we have brought about to Tokyo's quite another land. In her enterprising movement, she is England with improvements which she dutifully offered to our motherland.
And now then for our first drawing room. Where are the princesses? What an extraordinary thing it is that since European looking glasses have been supplied to the royal bedrooms, my daughters are invariably late.
Sir, their royal highnesses with the Lady Sophie await your pleasure in the anteroom.
Oh, then request our royal household to do us the favor to enter at once. daughters, we are about to attempt a very solemn ceremonial, so no giggling, if you please. Now, my Lord Chamberlain, we are ready.
Then, ladies and gentlemen, places, if you please. His Majesty and their Royal Highnesses in front of the throne, and His Majesty will be so obliging as to embrace all the debutants.
What? Must I really?
Absolutely indispensable.
More jam for the Paris Peeper. Now, is everyone in his place?
Everyone is in his place.
Then let the revels commence.
Sweeping success of English customs at the court has been observed by Scafio and Fantis, who, to say the least, are not best pleased.
rage.
We do.
These Englishmen who rule supreme, they're undertaking deep by stifling every harmless scheme in which we both engage.
They do.
In which we both engage.
We think it is our turn.
We do.
We think our turn has come.
We do.
These Englishmen, they must prepare to seek at once their native heir. The king as heretofore, we swear, shall be beneath our thumb.
He shall.
Shall be beneath our thumb.
He shall.
For this must be, and this will do. If you'll back me, then I'll back you. No, this won't do. No, this mustn't be. No, this mustn't be, and this won't do.
No, this won't do. Gentlemen, gentlemen, this unseemly display of energy within the royal precincts is altogether unpardonable. Pray, what do you complain of?
What do we complain of? Why, through the innovations introduced by the flowers of progress, all our harmless schemes for making a provision for our old age are ruined.
Ruined.
Our matrimonial agency is at a standstill.
Standstill.
Our cheap sherry business is in bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy.
Our army clothing contracts are paralyzed.
Paralyzed.
And even our society paper, the Palace Peeper, is practically defunct.
Defunct.
Defunct? Is that so, dear, dear? I am truly sorry. Are you aware that Sir Bailey Barr has introduced a law of libel by which all editors of scurrilous newspapers are publicly flogged, as in England? And six of our editors have resigned in succession. Now, the editor of a scurrilous paper can stand a good deal. He takes a private thrashing as a matter of course. It's considered in his salary. But no gentleman likes to be publicly flogged.
Naturally, I shouldn't like it myself.
Then our burlesque theatre is absolutely ruined.
Dear me, well, theatrical property is not what it was.
Are you aware that the Lord Chamberlain, who has his own views as to the best means of elevating the national drama, has declined to license any play that is not in blank verse and 300 years old, as in England?
And as if that wasn't enough, the county councillor has ordered a 4-foot wall to be built up right across the proscenium in case of fire, as in England.
It's so hard on the company, who are liable to be roasted alive, and this has to be met by enormously increased salaries, as in England.
You probably know that we've contracted to supply the entire nation with a complete English outfit. But perhaps you do not know that when we send in our bills, our customers plead liability, limited to a declared capital of 18 pence, and apply to be dealt with under the Winding Up Act, as in England.
Really, gentlemen, this is very irregular. If you will be so good as to formulate a detailed list of your grievances in writing, addressed to the Secretary of Utopia Limited, they will be laid before the board in due course at their next monthly meeting.
Are we to understand that we are defied?
That is the idea I intended to convey.
Defied? We are defied.
Take care, you know our powers. Trifle with us, and you die.
If you think that we're banded in unity, we may both be defied with impunity. You are sadly misled of a verity. If you value repose and tranquility, you revert to a state of docility, or prepare to regret your temerity. If my speech is unduly refractory, you may find it, of course, satisfactory at an early board meeting to show it up. Though with proper excuse you can company, you may wind up a limited company. You cannot conveniently blow it up. Whene'er I chance to baffle you, I also dance a step or two. Of this now guess the hidden sense. Of this now guess the hidden sense. Means complete indifference.
Of course it does, of course it does. It means complete indifference.
Indifference, indifference, indifference.
As we the dance on every move, we part as well, we will conclude. With this we mean, you all may guess. It simply buys remorselessness, remorselessness, remorselessness.
It means a wrath for cheerfulness.
Remorselessness, remorselessness. It simply buys remorselessness.
He's right. We are helpless. Yes. He's no longer a human being. He's a corporation. Yes. And so long as he confines himself to his articles of association, we can't touch him. What are we to do?
Do? Raise a revolution. Repeal the Act of 62. Reconvert him into an individual and insist on his immediate explosion. Terora, come here. You're the very man we want.
Certainly. Allow me.
A cracker? Pa!
That's rude.
We have no time for idle forms. Listen. You wish to succeed, to
to the throne.
Naturally.
Then you won't unless you join us. Hmm? The king has defied us, and as matters stand, we are helpless. So are you. We must devise some plot at once to bring the people about his ears.
A plot?
Yes. A plot of superhuman subtlety. Have you such a thing about you?
No, I think not. No, there's one on my dressing table.
We can't wait. We must concoct one at once and put it into execution without delay. There is not a moment to spare.
We'll wildly brain upon the spot a private plot. We'll plan the most ingenious private plots is private plots began. That's understood so far. We've got, and striking while the iron's hot, we'll now determine like a shot the details of this private plot.
I think we ought.
Such bosh I never heard. Ah, happy thought!
We put it to the spot.
How utterly desperate, sir! I'll tell you how. Why, what put that in your head? I've got it now. Oh, take him away to bed. Oh, put it to bed. Oh, put it to bed.
What put me to bed?
Yes, certainly put it to bed.
But bless me, don't you see?
Do listen to me, I pray. It certainly seems to me.
Oh, this is the only way.
It's rubbish, absurd. You growl, you talk ridiculous stuff.
You're a dribbling bando.
You're a vapid and vain old bluff. You're a vain old bluff.
You're a dribbling bando.
You're a dribbling, dribbling, dribbling bando.
So far, we haven't quite solved the plot. They're not a very ingenious lot. But don't be unhappy, it's still on the tabby, but presently he's on the capital plot.
Suppose we all...
Now there, I think you're right. Then we might all... That's true, we certainly might. I'll tell you what.
We will if we possibly can, then on the spot.
Bravo, a capital plan.
That's exceedingly neat and new.
Exceedingly new and neat. I fancy that that will do.
It's suddenly very complete.
Well done, you sly old sap. Bravo, you cunning old beau.
You very ingenious chap.
You intellectual, intellectual soul.
You very ingenious chap.
You very ingenious chap.
Last the capital plan we got. We won't say how and we won't say what. It's saved in my novel. Now off we will trundle and slightly develop this capital plot. And then the capital plan we got. We won't say how and we won't say what. It's saved in my novel. Now off we will trundle and slightly develop this capital plot.
Well, Goldberry, what do you think of our first South Pacific drawing room? Allowing for a slight difficulty with the trains and a little want of familiarity with the use of the rouge pot, it was, on the whole, a meritorious affair.
My dear Dramaly, it redounds infinitely to your credit.
One or two judicious innovations, I think.
Admirable. The cup of tea and the plate of mixed biscuits were a cheap and effective inspiration.
Yes, my idea entirely. Never been done before.
Mm. Pretty little maids, the king's youngest daughters, but timid.
That'll wear off. Young.
That'll wear off. Ah, here they come, by George. And without the dragon, what can they have done with her?
Oh, if you please, Lady Sophie has sent us in here because Zara and Captain Fitzbattleaxe are going on in the garden in a manner which no well-conducted young ladies ought to witness.
Indeed, we are very much obliged to her ladyship.
Are you? I wonder why. Don't tell us if it's rude.
Rude? Not at all. We are obliged to Lady Sophie because she has afforded us the pleasure of seeing you.
I don't think you ought to talk to us like that. It's calculated to turn our heads. Attractive girls cannot be too particular.
Oh, pray, pray do not take advantage of our unprotected innocence.
Pray be reassured. You are in no danger whatever.
But may I ask, is this extreme delicacy, this shrinking sensitiveness, a general characteristic of utopian young ladies?
Oh, no. We are crack specimens.
We are the pick of the basket.
Oh.
Oh, would you mind not coming quite so near? Thank you.
And please don't look at us like that. It unsettles us.
And we don't like it. At least we do like it, but it's wrong.
We have enjoyed the inestimable privilege of being educated by a most refined and easily shocked English lady on the very strictest English principles.
But my dear young lady...
Oh, don't. You mustn't. It's too affectionate.
It really does unsettle us.
Are you really under the impression that English girls are so ridiculously demure? Why, an English girl of the highest type is the best, the most beautiful, the bravest, and the brightest creature that heaven has conferred upon this world of ours. She is frank, open-hearted, and fearless, and never shows in so favourable a light as when she gives her own blameless impulses full play.
Oh, you shocking story!
Not at all. I am speaking the strict truth. I'll tell you all about her.
A wonderful joy our eyes to bless in her magnificent comeliness. Is an English girl of 11 stone 2 and 5 foot 10 in her dancing shoe. She follows the hounds and on she pounds. The field tails off and the muffs diminish. Over the hedges and brooks she bounds, straight as a crow from prime to finish. At cricket her kin will lose or win. She and her maids on grass and clover, 11 maids out, 11 maids in, and perhaps an occasional maiden over. Oh, go search the world and search the sea, then come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl. With a 10-mile spin, she stretches her limbs. She golfs, she punts, she rows, she swims. She plays, she sings, she dances too. From 10 or 11 till all is blue. At ball or drum, till small hours come, chaperone's fan conceals her yawning. She'll waltz away like a teetotum and never go home till daylight's dawning. Lawn tennis may share her favors fair, her eyes a dance and her cheeks a glowing. Down comes her hair, but what does she care? It's all her own, and it's worth the showing. Ah, go search the world and search the sea, then come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl. Her soul is sweet as the ocean air, for prudery knows no haven there. To find mock modesty, please apply to the conscious blush and the downcast eye. Rich in the things contentment brings, in every pure enjoyment wealthy, blithe as a beautiful bird she sings, for body and mind are hale and healthy. Her eyes, they thrill with right goodwill, her heart is light as a floating feather, as pure and bright as the mountain rill that leaps and laughs in the highland heather. Ah, go search the world and search the sea, then come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl.
Then I may sing and play.
You may.
And I may laugh and shout.
No doubt.
It matters you and don't.
Of course.
You won't exclaim of
mine.
Then I may sing and play. And I may laugh and shout. You won't exclaim of
mine. Whatever you are, be that. Whatever you may be true, straightforwardly act, be honest, in fact, be nobody else but you.
Give every answer pat, your character to unfurl, and when it is ripe, you'll then be a type of a capital English girl.
Oh, sweet surprise, oh dear delight, to unfit, undisputed quite, all must be hot, the rules is right, where dark is wrong and nature right. Oh, sweet surprise, oh dear delight, to unfit, undisputed quite, all must be hot, the rules is right, where dark is wrong and nature right.
So the girls dance away with their new tutors, whose lessons seem more to their liking than those of their governess, Lady Sophie, whom we now find meditating alone. But not quite alone, for she's secretly observed by the king.
That spotless king and prince of
when you love me, for so you sing.
No, no, by the stars that shine above me, deep rated king. For while these rumors through the city bruited, remain uncontradicted, unrefuted, the object of my aversion rooted, repulsive thing.
Be just, the time is now at hand when truth may published be. These paragraphs were written and contributed by me.
By you? No, no.
Yes, yes, I swear, by me. I caught in Scapio's ruthless toil, contributed the lot.
And that is why you did not foil the author on the spot.
And that is why I did not foil the author on the spot.
I couldn't think why you did not foil the author on the spot.
I know very well why I did not.
Boil him on the spot. All rapture unrestrained, all a candid retractation, for a sovereign has deigned a convincing explanation. The clouds have gathered o'er, all have vanished in the distance, and the things of very low, one at least is in existence. Of things of very low, one at least is in existence.
The skies are blue above, and the earth is red and rosy. Now the lady of my love has accepted my proposal. For that ass in autumn ponds I have crossed without assistance, and a prudish pair of gauns, while that beast is in existence. A prudish pair of gauns, while that beast is in existence.
The clouds that gathered all
have vanished, have vanished,
have vanished,
have vanished,
have vanished
in the distance.
All have vanished, all have vanished, all have vanished, vanished, vanished in the distance.
All is well, and the king and Lady Sophie dance together. Meantime, the King and Lady Sophie have been observed by our other lovers, Zara and Fitzbattleaxe, Nakaya and Dramaly, and Goldberry and Kaliba. They declare themselves, and after a moment's hesitation, the King and Lady Sophie join them in a wild and joyful dance, a tarantella.
Down with it! 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 means this most unmannerly eruption is the short gratitude for boons conferred.
Boons? Bah! A fickle for such boons, say we.
These boons have brought Utopia to a standstill.
Our pride and boast, the army and the navy, have both been reconstructed and remodeled upon so irresistible a basis that all the neighboring nations have disarmed and wars impossible.
Your county councillor has passed such drastic sanitary laws that all the doctors dwindle, starve, and die.
The laws remodeled by Sir Bailey Barr have quite extinguished crime in litigation.
The lawyers starve, and all the jails are let as model lodgings for the working classes.
In short, Utopia, swamped by dull prosperity, demands that these detested flowers of progress be sent about their business, and affairs restored to their original complexion.
My daughter, this is a very unpleasant state of things. What is to be done?
I don't know. I don't understand it. We must have omitted something.
Omitted something? Yes, that's all very well. But what...
Of course. Now I remember. Why, I had forgotten the most essential element of all.
And that is?
Government by party. Introduce that great and glorious element, at once the bulwark and foundation of England's greatness, and all will be well. No political measures will endure, because one party will assuredly undo all that the other party has done. While grouse is to be shot, and foxes worried to death, legislative action in the country will be at a standstill. Then there will be sickness in plenty, endless lawsuits, crowded jails, interminable confusion in the army and the navy, and in short, general and unexampled prosperity.
Eureka! Eureka!
But an hour will come.
Your hour has come already. Away with them. Oh. And let them wait my will. From this moment, government by party is adopted with all its attendant blessings. And henceforward, Utopia will no longer be a monarchy limited, but what is a great deal better, a limited monarchy.
There's a little group of isles beyond the wave, so tiny you might almost wonder where it is. That nation is the bravest of the brave, and cowards are the rarest of all rarities. The proudest nation feel at her command, she terrifies all foreign-born rascallions, and holds the peace of Europe in her hand with half a score invincible battalions.
Her maxims wise, and imitate her virtues and her charities. And may we by degrees acclimatize her parliamentary peculiarities. By doing so, we shall in course of time regenerate completely our entire land. Great Britain is that monarchy sublime, to which some add, but others do not, Ireland.
Such a big land, which is all but again, from the island which swells in the sea. Let the swan for her sing, that she makes no mistake, that she for she professes to be. Such a big.
In that complete performance of Utopia Limited by W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan, King Paramount I was played by Peter Pratt. Scapio was sung by Derek Hammond Stroud and spoken by Rolf Lefevre. Fantis was sung by Eric Schilling and spoken by Aubrey Woods. Tarara was sung by John Frost and spoken by Wilfred Carter. Lord Drumalee was sung by David Price and spoken by Hamlin Benson. Captain Fitzbattleaxe was sung by Kenneth Byrne and spoken by Peter Howell. Captain Sir Edward Corcoran, KCB, was sung by Donald Frankie. Mr. Goldberry was sung by Leslie Fison and spoken by Frederick Treves, who also played Callings. Sir Bailey Barr, QC MP, was sung by Edgar Fleet, Mr. Blushington by John Noble. The Princess Zara was sung by Patricia Reeks and spoken by Sheila Manahan. Princess Nakaya was sung by Joanne Brown and spoken by Wendy Lovelock. Princess Kaliba was played by Jane Wenham.
Prices to get at low prices on good and proper pictures, the cable.
By Margaret Gordon. Salatar and Malini were spoken by Elizabeth Proud and Pamela Binns. Filler was sung by Doreen Murray. The Utopian Maidens, Lifeguards, and Utopian Citizens were the John McCarthy singers. The performance was conducted by Stanford Robinson and produced by Michael Moores.